Welcome to episode 42. Yes, you know, Hitchhiker's Guide jokes, whatnot. I get it. Of Off Color Cast, this is a segmented podcast that loves to explore the serious, the aggressive, and the awesome sides of EDH or Commander. Hey, I'm Chris. I like to play this here EDH, and I'm a butthole. This week I have two very special guest hosts for you. Let's start out with the first one. We have Cassidy Silver from over at the TCG Player. Why don't you say hello to everybody?
Hello, everyone. This is Cassidy, over from the TCG Player, as Chris says. I'm at Right or Wrong on Twitter. And you can check out the articles every Thursday, but they're usually up during the week, you know. So just check it out if you feel like it. Reading is kind of hard, I understand.
It really is. All right, and for a very special guest, we've got our boy Calvin Russell. He used to be a truck driver with an orangutan, former writer of 3tothefaced.com, currently doing nothing. Why don't you say hello to everybody, Calvin?
Hey, everybody. This is Calvin. I'm also known as Captain Reds and Raider Net. It's not really much I can really else say about, like, anything I've done. Like, who cares about my blog anymore? Like,
Fuck your blog.
Fuck my blog. Haven't written for anything. Might actually think about picking it up again just to see if I can still do it. It might be interesting.
Try it's like something. Riding a bike.
Yeah, it'll all come back to you. Yeah. Did I send you a message saying if you wanted to write stuff again? Because, like, Eternal Central theoretically has a commander section, but all they ever do is talk about the band updates.
Yeah, I saw something about that when we were talking about...
Oh, when we were talking about it, when I was like, guys, we should quit the show.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm fucking sick of this shit. I'm doing better now, though. That'll last about 2 weeks, and I'll be like, guys, this is the fucking worst.
Yeah, cool. Play by ear. It's all good.
Yeah. Well, I have the domain and hosting for commandersource.com, but I've just never gotten around to putting that fucker together.
Yeah.
So it just sort of sits there. Wasting money.
Wasting
one of the things I was going to bring up was, like, why don't we try, like, just, like, a bi-weekly show?
I'd probably be down with that.
Yeah, that's actually...
Do you know how awesome it is having a weekend where I don't have to edit the show?
Yeah, right. I don't know why I didn't think of that shit.
Shut up, Calvin. Shut up, Calvin.
No, just talking about how you guys would talk about, like, you know, like, the whole hiatus thing. Was like, you know, but if you did, like, a bi-weekly show... You guys, you know, everybody at least get like a week break in between shows, and we can still kind of like have something to do on the other end.
Still, like, not look like complete pieces of shit.
And then we wouldn't have to take long breaks even, because it'll be pretty.
Yeah.
I think that'd be cool.
This is good. And then I'll record secret episodes without you guys, so I can look good. And I'll just post those up and be like, it'll just be me.
Yeah, it'd be like an episode of just Chris by himself. You know, slap it up in between the weeks when we're like not actually. Putting up Off Color Show.
Be like,
quick question.
Yo.
Should we like make sure that we toss in some wrestling content here? Because I've come to notice that like a lot of previous episodes we've done recently has been kind of lacking.
We don't want to force it.
Yeah. Well, we might want to jam it though, right?
Okay. I haven't really watched any since National Pro Wrestling Day and the Rumble.
Oh. Yeah, it's been pretty good.
Yeah. Well, Kaiju Big Battle became my, or whatever it's called, became my new favorite fed.
Oh, really?
The guys that dress up like Godzilla monsters and wrestle each other.
No way, I've never seen that. That's awesome.
You're going to have to send me a link for that.
I'd like to do that.
Let me see if I can find the trailer here.
Because now I'm trying to, have you guys heard about that new thing where they're doing like the... Real steel, like in real life kind of thing, where people actually have, like, robots that battle each other.
Oh. Usually they're not bipedal, though, is the biggest thing with that.
Yeah, that's like BattleBots, right? Or they actually made them, like, Mech Warriors instead or something?
Yeah, it's some show that's going to be hosted by Chris Jericho.
I saw that.
Some type of weird thing where it's, like, actual, like, Mech Warriors and shit actually fighting each other.
That sounds like BattleBots 2.0, which I can't complain. BattleBots was awesome. Yeah.
And with Jericho hosting, of course it'll be good.
Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Red versus Blue.
Oh, man. Yeah, that
rematch.
The classic.
I'm dead serious. Like, I was watching that movie Robots with my niece the other day. And I actually saw like a poster for that in the background. It was actually like a boxing event in their movie. I was like,
that's the Pixar Toy Story-ish type thing? Okay, yeah, I've never seen that one.
Yeah, no, it's like one of those things, like, it's like, it's a poster in, like, the guy's room at the very beginning of the movie, but it's like, you're in the kid's room and he's, like, sitting there, you see, like, a poster. It's like, Rock'em Sock'em Robots 3. Red versus Blue, the epic battle continues, or some shit like that. And I'm like, huh.
Oh, actually, if you could check out the Botchamania episodes lately, you'll catch up on everything awesome that happened in the movie.
Mostly Jericho, I mean, totally, like, Dirty Dutch Mantel's back, so obviously he's being awesome.
Is he back, really?
Yeah, he's the manager for Jack Swagger.
Oh, wow, I did not even fucking recognize him.
Yeah, that's Dutch Mantel.
Wow, that's awesome.
yeah, it's funny that the two, like, most prolific people in WWF right now are Paul Heyman and Dutch Mantel, two guys who never wrestle anymore.
Yeah, and, well, I think The Rock is pretty prolific when it comes down to everything.
I guess I mean interesting.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's a better word.
Actually, the angle they had between Jack Swagger and Alberto Del Rio is pretty cool, and it's pretty attitude area-ish, you know.
Dutch is carrying it, I think.
I don't know, like, I don't even recognize Jack Swagger with that fucking yellow hair and,
like,
that creepy-ass beard.
Like, the really creepy beard.
Yeah, no, he's a totally different guy, and I think that's really cool how they did that.
I mean, before he was just, like, Ziggler Light.
You heard what he did on Saturday, right?
No.
He was Swagger. Like, on Saturday, Swagger had got arrested for DWI and possession of pot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he almost fucked the whole thing up. But the thing is, like, if it wasn't for the fact that it's, like, this close to WrestleMania and he's already getting, like, a massive push, they were, like, 4 steps away from just, like, saying, you know, never mind, just kill this angle and give Mark.
I mean, they let Orton get high all the time and still keep him around.
Yeah, but then one thing where it's like Orton getting high all the time is one thing, but when Orton gets busted getting high and arrested, then it becomes like, okay, we kind of have to do something about it.
Yeah, but I mean, Kurt Angle did the same thing, and everyone's like, who cares? And I mean, we all watched the Jeff Hardy fiasco versus Sting, so. I don't think I'll ever see a bad as match as that ever in my entire life, and that's sad.
Yeah, that was the worst.
Yeah, I like when Sting is just like, I agree.
Yeah.
That might be the best part of TNA ever.
extensively high, drunk, and out of his fucking mind, Jeff Hardy going into a ring against a senior citizen.
I know it's weird, but I think, like, the current Jeff Hardy title reign actually works for TNA.
I haven't been able to watch it in a really long time. I don't got Spike or whatever.
I basically stopped caring shortly after they started revealing people from Aces and Eights.
But when D-Von was one of them, it was intense. When Taz became one of them, it became less intense.
Yeah.
They should only film me from the neck up.
I mean, he's always kind of had that problem. he looks like an ripped. Overweight. He was ripped, but he still looked like an overweight munchkin.
He was fat ripped.
Yeah. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I mean, Human Suplex Machine is like one of the greatest things of all time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Dreamer definitely looks way better than Taz does these days.
Dreamer doesn't have to work that hard because no one expects anything out of Dreamer.
No, my friend keeps seeing him in the local shows. It's like, why do you love Dreamer so much?
I mean, I would go see him local. I mean, he's cool and he's genuine and all that stuff, so it's not like he's a dick. So I'd still go see him and support him. But, I mean, he's always been the guy who's like, now he's getting his ass kicked by Raven, and now he's getting his ass kicked by the Sandman. All right.
Yeah, like, nobody should be getting their ass kicked by the... I think Sandman was always booked to lose, and he just didn't know. That's what I like to believe.
I bet that happened a lot.
Or when he came out naked with just, like, that fanny pack around his junk.
Talk about Paul Heyman.
Sandman wouldn't be wrestling if it were these days.
Yeah, no one would let him get near it. Yeah. I mean, Necro Butcher is, like, way more clean cut, and he's pretty much the lowest of the lows when it's not inside CCW.
But I mean, like, Necro Butcher isn't you'd at least believe that he's halfway sober in some of his matches.
Yeah.
Sandman is like, I don't know. Oh, did you see Scott Hall's in the DDP house?
Oh, what?
They're trying to get him clean. DDP and Jake the Snake are both with Scott Hall trying to clean him up.
They're kind of gonna fuck around and catch a contact type fucking with Scott Hall.
Kevin Nash is pretty pissed about it. He's like, guys, do you think if we were able to get him help, he wouldn't have already been helped by now?
Yeah, he'll just be pissed off when they do help him, and he'll be like, what?
Kevin Nash will be like, the best thing Kevin Nash ever said on Twitter was, if you fuckers keep saying torn quad, I'm just going to block you all.
I actually like him on Twitter. He's one of the few wrestlers I can still follow. He says like things that are annoying all day.
When I learned that the Iron Sheik was actually run by two comedians that just poke him for lines, I didn't care for it as much. Yeah.
Oh, that blows.
Yeah.
These old hopes and dreams for his Iron Sheik Twitter.
I haven't been on Twitter in like a long time, so it doesn't really matter, but that is one of the best parts about Twitter.
What wrestlers do I even have on here? I had Mongo for a while.
The Briscoes are really funny to follow.
I have Mick Foley, but he mostly is just pimping anything he's doing.
Yeah, he's a businessman. He's busy making cheddar.
Buy my stuff.
Yep. Some dude has the Shockmaster as his avatar, and I keep thinking it's Shockmaster.
Like two in a pink, one in a stink?
No, the dude who fell over and his mask fell off when he debuted in WCW.
Oh, okay, yeah, the guy with the big ass,
he was supposed to be like the electrician. Dusty Rhodes should not be allowed to make wrestlers.
Yeah.
On one of the recent Botchamanias, they had Dusty Rhodes commenting on a match with a leprechaun. But the leprechaun was tall, and he just kind of had, like, painted skin. He almost looked like Sheamus with green painted skin, and it was just the last couple Botchamanias have been really good.
That's good.
And it'll definitely catch you up on the best parts of WWE.
Yeah. That's the thing, like, Botchamania is better when you don't watch wrestling.
Yeah.
Because if you've seen it all already, it's like, all right, yeah, that's great.
Sometimes
except for like the CZW stuff, because I never fucking see that shit.
Yeah, who watches that? But, you know, sometimes you'll catch like a slip, and you'll be like, I wonder if Matthew will get it, and then he totally did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
you got to see the little riff Jericho busted on Booker T. Did you see that, Calvin? When he was doing the 7-time champion thing, and Booker T. Halfway between like trying to laugh and just slap him across the face for yanking his gimmick.
I didn't get a chance to see that one.
Oh yeah, it's pretty funny. That was on the Botchamania, that's why I recommend it. But you could also probably just find it.
I'm gonna check that out once this is over.
Booker T might have been my favorite announcer for WWF.
I like Layfield a lot because he's like a wrestler, so he talks about wrestling.
JBL, well, JBL's good because he will just shit on anything Cole says.
Yeah, which is nice because I've never liked Cole, even when he was like lower than what Josh Matthews is now. And it's just like,
I guess on what, like on the main event, JBL shits on Matthews or Matt Stryker or whoever they're fucking. Main event's actually a decent show because it's only an hour long, so it's like, all right, we're going to do two or three matches. Bam, show's over.
Oh, yeah, hell yeah, I love main event. Also, you know, Claudio's on it every week, so yeah.
Bo Dallas isn't on it.
Yeah. Whose kid was that again?
IRS.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I feel like they had a different name for him last time they
brought
him out, right?
IRS?
Oh, wait, who's the fat guy? Husky Harris? Wasn't he the son of IRS too? Or?
I don't know. I liked him when he was M. Wall Street. I think that lasted about a day in WCW.
Was that a ripoff of the character that he originally made or something?
I think. he was kind of rotund, you know, since his last name's Rotunda.
Oh, yeah. There's so much gold having, like, a really racist, creepy-ass dude as a heel. I really, really like that character a lot. And the fact that I didn't even notice it was Dutch Mantel. I was kind of like, who the fuck is this gross old guy?
And why does he have such a wicked mustache?
Yeah. Why does he seem so awesome?
Did you see the promo where they torched Glenn Beck?
They're
cutting a promo, and then they just cut to the green screen, and are like, okay, Glenn Beck, you have to understand we're acting here.
Which one's Glenn Beck?
One of the stupid ultra-conservative TV show dudes.
Oh, that he doesn't like wrestling, basically?
Yeah, and he doesn't like the current angle because it's, you know, racist as hell.
Oh.
And because it's making fun of the Tea Party.
Oh, is that what that?
Yeah. And so, you know, at one point they cut it and they go to the green screen. They get, you know, they do the whole give their real names thing and say, this is entertainment. Our fans are smart. They know the difference between entertainment and real, et cetera, et cetera. So either they really dissed Glenn Beck or he's in on it and he'll show up at WrestleMania.
I don't think that's going to happen. Yeah. That'd be too
awesome. I don't know. Remember when Arquette won the title for WCW?
Well,
that was one of the most shameful things on earth.
It was shameful, but also David Arquette's like basically a retarded whore.
Yeah.
Dude, Glenn Beck is probably not gonna be like totally
he's
on
kind
board
of a retarded whore too.
A little bit, but you know, they pretend not to be anyways.
Yeah, man, David Arquette winning the title is so terrible.
Yeah. I mean, WCW was really bad at that point.
Like, not as bad as like Pac-Man Jones accidentally winning the title at TNA. They're like, he's not going to wrestle. Mysteriously, he's wrestling.
Oh, man. Yeah, I really wish I could watch TNA, because, like, even though I didn't like the show, you know, the Motor City Machine Guns are the sweetest. Are they still wrestling on there? Have you guys seen it at all?
Not together, I don't think.
Really?
TNA.
Yeah.
Like, they stopped trying to be WWF, which has really helped them, and they're going back on the road again.
Oh, I went to their live shows. It was horrible when I went to it last time. Like, really bad. But it had Jeff Hardy in the show, so that was a big part of it.
And Jeff Hardy has the strap still, and he's doing a much better title run than when he's drunk as hell.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. But, it looks like, actually, Alex Shelley is in New Japan.
Oh, okay.
And
what about Chris Sabin?
Chris
Sabin
is... Which one is... in the X Division.
Oh, that's lame. Oh, man. Like, for a while, they were doing, like, you know, putting the Motor City Machine Guns in a lot of indie shows. Mm-hmm. To, like, Crosspron and stuff. And they fought the Kings of Wrestling at a live show I went to for Ring of Honor. And it was, like, one of the greatest moments ever. Pretty sad that they're not together.
I think I've really liked James Storm lately. I don't know why.
Yeah, I noticed that Austin Aries and...
Yeah, he's been pretty good, too.
They're on, like, a tag team and they're champions, though, or something?
They might be. It's hard to tell anymore.
Yeah, I just saw Botchamania. I guess because Aries was botching some lines.
Imagine that. All right, I'll just cut most of this in and throw it in the show to make it longer.
Okay, whatever.
Except for the stuff where we talk about black people.
But WWE does need more strap matches.
Yeah,
ooh,
they do.
They could do a strap match between R-Truth and Kofi Kingston.
Well, they're buddies, though.
Nah. They need to turn one of those heel.
Yeah, that would be pretty funny,
actually. I don't know.
R-Truth heel is pretty cool.
Heel Truth and Face Truth are practically the same thing anyway.
Yeah, yeah, but I'm thinking they should turn Kofi heel.
Actually, I don't know. I don't think Kofi could do it.
I don't know. No, his career would be ruined if he turned heel.
Well, Heel Truth coming out in the Confederate outfit in the South might have been the best thing on wrestling.
Dude teams up with Jack Swagger, beats the crap out of Sin Cara and Rey Mysterio for the titles or something.
Like Kofi basically fell off once Evan Bourne got snagged for weed or steroids. I forget which.
Is that why he's gone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy was really cool.
Couldn't keep the weed down.
And they killed R-Truth when they made him tag team with The Miz.
Oh, yeah. This is so lame. I can't stand that guy.
Yeah.
But the thing about Kofi Kingston, I think, is kind of interesting, though, is because if you think, like, about the time when he, like, fucked up that card that was supposed to have been Randy Orton's or whatever, like, that's something that was actually kind of, like, fun to watch. So I could actually see Kofi, like, maybe not doing, like, a full heel turn, but, like, at least getting, like, one of those, like, really angry-ass black men kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, drop... Because you can't really take a wrestler serious if he has a smiling ass on his trunks.
Well, you know, he comes from, like, South Africa, right? So he could do that whole, like, South African militant type deal and just be like...
So you're bringing back Nation of Domination is what I'm hearing.
Well, no, Nation of Domination was the Nation of Islam, which was like a fad religion, basically.
D'Lo Brown is in TNA right now. He can't come back.
Oh, I can't believe anyone will let that guy wrestle after he crippled Draws. I mean, come on, it's on TV, sorry, bro.
Or, I don't know, they let Perry Saturn wrestle.
Oh, is he coming back yet?
I don't know. I don't, like, I can't, like, Saturn was good in WCW as part of the Flock.
Yeah.
The Flock was awesome. And then, like, he's a guy I feel like WWF legit ruined when they brought him over because they're just like, fuck this guy.
Well, I think he was good in ECW.
Then he hurt that kid. Yeah.
Oh, he hurt a kid?
Yeah. And I think it was a dark match. I think he really busted up some kid or something.
Freaked out on him, basically.
It was an accident.
Okay.
But, you know, sometimes that should happen.
Yeah.
I can't think of a mid-carder to feud with Kingston.
Mid-carder worth feuding with Kingston. If he was just like a face or heel?
Yeah.
Well, they actually recently did something where, I can't remember who it was. He had a match where Kofi just got his ass kicked for like, I think it was The Miz maybe or something. I can't remember, but like, he got sucker punched and then just like got wailed on and R-Truth came out and helped him. So, I mean, they are developing.
That was Sandow.
Oh yeah, it was Damian Sandow. That's right.
Who's Cesaro? Yeah. Is Cesaro feuding with The Miz? Is that who
I think? Cesaro is currently going into like a thing with Randy Orton.
That'll be good. Well, I mean, Castagnoli will carry it, but that could be good.
Currently, Miz is just kind of out there floating around.
Which one was it? The Miz when he was just like swinging him into the wall back and forth? Was that The Miz?
Where I swing into the wall?
Cesaro, I forget which match it was, but I was just seeing him. He had his back to the like the wall that holds back the in between the fans and the ring, and he just kept swinging this dude back and forth into it.
It's hard to remember because I've seen him wrestle so many times.
Yeah.
So it's like I can't remember, but I think basically him feuding with The Miz is over because he beat the living fuck out of The Miz, and no one believes that he. You know what I mean? Like, this is the guy that's like. That can actually stand up to Ryback and have a good match.
That should actually be a match they should go towards because Ryback is doing like Ryback doesn't belong anywhere.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He's kind of involved with the Shield.
Yeah,
thing,
but I mean, like,
fall apart, you know?
Ryback is the kind of dude that you would have the Undertaker wrestle, but Ryback hasn't been around long enough for that.
I think he would hurt the Undertaker.
Yeah, versus the Shield is actually getting kind of weak though because, like, in comparison, like Ryback. Ever since the Shield has shown up, has basically been losing and losing and losing, and it's either because of the Shield or to the Shield. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like one of those things with Ryback where before The Rock showed up, he was actually up there in the top tier, but then The Rock showed up and the Shield showed up, and now he's kind of just like slowly plummeting down to like the low mid card.
Well, Brock Lesnar is even showing up too, and I mean, Brock Lesnar is basically, he's basically copying. Like a third of his personality is Brock Lesnar, along with Goldberg and Rhino, basically. Like, that's the character to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so Rhino is the best one out of all those.
Hell yeah, Rhino's awesome.
Yeah, Lesnar's terrible.
So Ryback probably isn't going to be getting, like, really anything good going for himself until at least after WrestleMania when Lesnar goes back into hibernation, Triple H leaves, Undertaker's done for the moment, and maybe The Rock loses the title and goes shoots another movie.
Kids like Ryback, though.
I think he could have a good feud with the Big Show. I think the Big Show is like in good enough shape where like they could
crying show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Big Show was feuding with Del Rio, and that feud's over. So I think that could be interesting for him. But mostly, I just don't like.
Can they have Big Show choke slam as his finisher again?
He does sometimes.
There's too many striking finishers in WWF right now.
I don't know. I like his the best, though, because it never made sense that he would put all this effort into, like, throwing people around when he could just be, like, punch them and then lay on them and it's over. So I always like that. It's kind of like, I'm lazy. I'm just going to punch you.
But his punch looks so stupid. throws, like, this, like, kitten paw kind of swing. And it's like, I'm supposed to believe that this is knocking out dudes.
Yeah, hey, come on. They sold us the people's elbow and the five knuckle shuffle. Come on.
Yeah, but those aren't like finishers. What? Those are setter uppers. I've never seen John Cena beat someone by doing a five knuckle shuffle.
Okay, but the people's elbow used to put them away. Okay,
yeah,
the
people's elbow did.
Yeah, people's elbow would happen. Yes. I get that one.
Sometimes it would take the second elbow.
Yeah, take the second elbow, maybe get a rock bottom, and then hit the elbow.
Okay, and then the worm.
Come on, Hogan, you guys. And Hogan's leg.
Does anybody have a cutter right now?
Finisher?
Oh,
is Orton.
Okay, I'm guessing I just blank Orton out of my brain because I can't believe I forgot that. A.
Yeah.
And B, I wish someone else did it.
Yeah, well, he's kind of taken over. Like, no one calls it a cutter at all. So anyone who does like any variation of it calls it an RKO variation. Even like, you know, even wrestling journalists and stuff. So it's like,
I think the Stone Cold Stunner was a special kind of cutter because it always began with a kick to the balls.
Yeah, I mean it's a little different. That's like a chin breaker.
Yeah,
it's a different move. But I always liked Mikey Whipwreck a lot too.
It's like the difference between like a head scissors and a Hurricane Rana. I mean, if you listen,
don't call it a Hurricane Rana when you're talking to a Steiner.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. The Frankensteiner, Hurricane Rana, like head scissors.
Man, I need to see what Scott Steiner's doing right now.
Hmm?
I need to see what Scott Steiner's doing right now.
Cutting a very bad promo somewhere.
I can't believe TNA cut him.
Scott Steiner's the Gary Busey of wrestling.
My God, he's not doing anything right now.
Probably
this makes me sad. Scott Steiner's one of my favorite wrestlers.
Yeah, he's awesome.
What about Rick Steiner?
I haven't seen him around in a long time.
Yeah,
he's a math teacher.
Well, you know, actually, technically, Hurricane Rana is it when it lands in the pin?
Yeah. Somebody should just start doing the sunset flip or something, or like somebody's finisher should be the small package.
Someone had that. I can't remember who.
What, the small package? As
oh yeah, Daniel Bryan did. Bryan Danielson had that as his finisher for a long time. Oh, we should probably get started on
wife is going to start hating us pretty soon here.
Yeah, she's getting mad.
She's like, what the fuck are you guys doing? You guys going to do a show or you're going to talk about fucking wrestling?
Yeah.
She doesn't realize that half of our show is talking about wrestling.
Hasn't been for a while. Some people, well, I know someone's going to bitch at me for having this much wrestling in it, but I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Well, if it isn't time for Chris's stupid card thing, here on Off Color.
Alright, hey kids, what has it been, like forever since I've done a stupid card thing, so let's do one. Hey, it's an old border card, imagine that. Now, Gudongs will tell you this card isn't stupid because he runs it, but it's pretty asinine, so we're going to let it pass. Also, I'm starting to run out of cards that are stupid and also playable. But we're going to be talking about Dimensional Breach, a 7 mana sorcery from Scourge, 5 white. Exile all permanents. Now, that sounds pretty good right there, doesn't it? For as long as any of those cards remain exiled, at the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player returns one of the exiled cards he or she owns to the battlefield. So it's like really awesome phasing. So I've cast this card. I had it in a Zer deck, which is kind of asinine to begin with. But, you know, it's a very dirtly card. You cast it, everyone looks at you like, what the fuck did you just do? And then you slowly get the game back to wherever you were at before. Have you guys ever played, messed with, touched, put this thing in your butthole?
I've never even seen this thing. But yeah, I have to admit, though, it's pretty interesting. It's kind of like a white combo breaker.
Then, of course, there's also the detractors who will say, A, it's sorcery speed, B, if you play it at sorcery speed, that means that the other people all get their stuff before you get your first thing.
Yeah.
Haters, they be that way.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, if you have any of those things that make things instant speed, this is a great, say the board's locked up, but you have like one big old dude, you know, you cast this at the end of the last opponent's end step, you drop this guy, preferably a guy with haste, and then he just, you know, gets to do whatever. If, you play with groups that don't care if Worldfire actually gets played, this could be very interesting.
Huh. You know, this might actually be really interesting in like a Ruhan build. Because then you could like exile everything and then even though everybody gets their first piece back, You could use it to get Ruhan back, and then you kind of just have this massive ass 7-7 that's just going to slowly try to wreck every body that's left in the gang. And whoever didn't get a creature might accidentally end up dying to Ruhan general damage before anything comes back.
Yeah. Theoretically, you'd want like 11 mana or something like that. Because you'd really want to have Fervor or something and then bring out Ruhan, or have Ruhan out and then bring out... Well, I like guess if you had Ruhan out, you wouldn't need to wait a turn. Yeah.
Urobrask would be ridiculous in that situation. Yeah.
So if you had 11 mana and you were playing America colors, you cast this, bring out Ruhan, and then bring out Urobrask next turn. And just say,
you could do Urobrask first, because then Ruhan will have haste.
Yeah.
And then he'll make all your opponent's creatures tap too, so they won't be able, you know, unless there's one creature that they... Unless they took a creature over a land or something.
Yeah. Of course, then we, you know, Urobrask, we need 12 mana then. In the heavy ramp America colors.
Yeah, well, I mean, blue can do anything it wants with
our... Yeah, that's true.
My brother just picked up a mana crypt, so...
That guy.
Yeah, about that. The thing I don't like about this card, though, is that it hits all permanents, not non-land permanents, which is what I would prefer. You know what I mean? Like, getting rid of all lands, this is kind of like, it's kind of like a Karn restart in a lot of ways, where like, it's almost like Scheherazade. You know, it's that kind of thing to me, where it restarts the game.
Scheherazade bad, but it can be pretty bad.
It could, I mean, it'll definitely bog things down in an interesting board state, which is, I mean, you know, it's always like the duality of Armageddon. Sometimes Armageddon is the play to kill your opponents, but sometimes someone plays it when, you know, when they're down, and it's just going to make everything go slower. Mm-hmm. And I could see this card kind of ending up that way. The one thing, though, I do notice, though, is that just exiles all permanents and not graveyards or anything like that. So it's something like Caridor or maybe Shroom, like a reanimator type deck. You could cast this with nothing really on board and like play Caridor with like floated mana, you know, and just like cast a few creatures from the graveyard, cast elves. Like, I play a lot of ramps. Like, my Caridor deck is very low curve. So, like, I could imagine casting this and just, like, dominating the board. The problem is, though, that it's 7 to cast, so it's kind of like...
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, you don't want to cast this when you'd normally be casting a turn 7 thing without ramp. Right. Like, this is something you want to hit, like, turn 3, 4, or 5. Because you really want to fuck up their mid-game as opposed to... Once everyone's got their like finishers out anyway, they're just gonna bring that guy back.
Right. I mean, if they have a chance to choose Ulamog as their first thing to come back with Dimensional Breach, you know,
all right, guys, that was fun.
Yeah. I guess Annihilator 4 is pretty overpowered when you only have two things on board though.
So. But if you have someone playing like Azusa or something where you know they keep ramping, you can really if they've gotten a lot of their lands out. They have most of their basics out and they're running bad ramp, which only finds basics. Mm. Or something like that. If they got most of those out, they can only bring one of those in, you know, one at a time per turn. They're sort of stifled at that point.
Yeah, that is pretty cool, actually. I like that.
So, depending on, you know, if you have a guy who just plays a bunch of lands and then, you know, has like an uber turn coming, you can set them back further than like the guy who, he's, you know, running an aggro deck. Well, I mean, they're being set back too, but their master plan is not casting a lot of stuff on one turn.
Right.
One thing about this I find interesting is that since it only exiles permanents, that means you get to still kind of scope your hand before you actually cast this thing. So if you somehow reach like the 7 mana and you haven't done your land drop yet, you could like cast this and then slap down a land, use that land to tap for like a soul ring or something. And by the time it comes back to you, you'd actually have enough, like, mana open to be able to play stuff while everybody's still kind of picking away what was taken away from them.
I was about to say this would be really good with that enchantment that exiles all your planes and you can play them, except they would exile the enchantment.
Well, speaking of enchantments, we could always use Paradox Haze after we cast the spell, which will, you know, so it'll give us two upkeeps, so double up the effect, so that'd be pretty cool. And, Calvin kind of mentioned the, you know, sculpting your hand and playing the Soul Ring, but I mean, even cooler if this was in like some sort of like green-white ramp deck, where like the whole idea is you just like mess up the entire board and then you can rebuild the fastest because you're playing Azusa and you've been like you know, holding back lands and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That could be a pretty fun strategy, you know.
You cast this, drop Azusa, bring back Oracle and Moldiah, and be like,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, that was fun.
Please, like, what was the red freighter we were talking about, the one that has haste?
Urabrask,
yeah.
Okay, so here's how you do this, right? Somehow you get Urabrask out. You use O-Ring on your own Urabrask. Then you cast this. This thing will exile the O-Ring. Your Urabrask will come back from exile because it was under the O-Ring. And now everybody has things that comes in tapped while you have your hasty whatever freighter to be able to try to smash people with.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
O-Ring actually, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. I would run Journey to Nowhere then, too.
Just yeah, be like, absolutely.
Load up on these kind of effects, hide your guys behind them, and then be like...
Because the thing is, like, you know, and the thing is, no one's going to want to destroy your O-Ring, because, like, what, I'm going to destroy your O-Ring just so you can get your Urabrask back?
Yeah, I'm going to destroy your...
you know, and it's one of the things where it's like, you know, we've got two choices here. It's like, I have Urabrask, I'm going to O-Ring it. You can destroy the O-Ring or let it sit. If you destroy the O-Ring, then, you know what, I get a creature back, and... You know, I guess I just don't cast Dimension of Reach, you know, just smash you with the creature I got back.
Imagine if, if you O-Ring to Sun Titan.
Ooh.
And they'll just be like, okay, I'll blow it up. And be like, alright. Just attack with a Sun Titan, get my O-Ring back.
Yeah, because then you could attack the Sun Titan, and then the O-Ring would come back, and you could put it on the Sun Titan again.
Actually, no. If they blew up the O-Ring, Sun Titan would come back, and then you just put the O-Ring back on it. Duh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because the old ring will go into great guy, some Titan to show up and bring him back in.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Actually, there's stuff like Sudden Disappearance, too, like where you can blink all your creatures until the end of turn, cast this, you know, and then your creatures will just come back.
Yeah, now we're looking at, like, 13 mana.
Well, yeah, I can't. I mean, Sudden Disappearance is pretty high on the curve.
We don't all run green here.
You could use Vincer. You could use Vincent to blink something out temporarily.
Right, that comes back at end of turn, right?
The Planeswalker one, right? That's the end of turn, right?
Yeah, I think it does. Yeah.
Does it still come back but if Vincent gets blown up?
But I think Vincent is, like, it has... Does Vincent, like, target permanent, or is it, like, a permanent
it's target
opponent.
Permanent you own.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, you could use Vincent to target your own thing, and then cast this, and then once this happens, at the end of turn, you'll get something back because of Vincent.
Yeah, and you'll still get it at the end of turn because it's not like a delayed trigger. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a thing that happens.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's not quite like the Fiend Hunter O-Ring stuff.
Dual deck Venser is ugly.
Yeah, I didn't like it. The only thing I liked out of that thing was the anger. The anger from that deck was amazing.
I feel bad for Venser. Like he's just hanging out, and Koth sees him. He's like, "Put on this fucking mask." It's like, okay, buddy. And then they're like, give up your heart so Karn can live. It's like, come on, guys. Seriously?
Yeah, but it's hard to feel sorry for the Shaper Savant. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, like, yeah. Shaper Savant, no, fuck that guy. Man, whoa, Anger does look way better. Old Anger looks so stupid.
Oh, it was horrible, and that one, like, looks really cool. Yeah, it's like a little like lava man from like one of those Rudolph movies or something. If they had that, you know what I mean? Like, so outdated and horrible. Like, yeah. Why?
Okay, so I don't know. I think we've actually talked more interesting things about this stupid card than we have a lot of them in the past.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool card. I mean, I'm not gonna agree with Judd and say that it's a good card. I mean,
well, I don't think he'd say it's good, but he'd say it's too good for a stupid card.
I don't know. I think it is kind of a stupid card because it's not good in every deck or anything like that. So I definitely think it's on par with this normal. It's like it's like Equipoise, only not as bad.
Awesome Poise.
I do like that it's not that's not a permanent, like an enchantment that does it.
Yeah, you know that'd be pretty awful because then it would just get blown up all the time.
And everyone's stuff is exiled, and it's like, okay, that was fun.
That's true. Like, you don't usually see, like, a such long, you know, a spell that's going to have so many upkeep triggers throughout a game.
Right. And it hasn't really been updated even to have, like, really modern language in my eyes, you know what I mean?
It's like, not like Exile Dimensional Breach with X time counters where that X is the number of permanents you control. Right.
Exactly. Like, it so could have been like that, but they just kind of kept it simple. Probably like, because no one plays it. Well, doesn't need a retcon.
Scourge, I count as like the doldrums of magic.
Yeah.
It wasn't a good time.
Yeah.
Like, they left Dominaria, and they're like, all right, here, we're going to try this. And it's just like, nope. Then they did Mirrodin. It's like, all right.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool story.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. All right, so, oh, yeah. I forgot what we even do here. So, thumbs up or thumbs down, Cassidy?
Oh, yeah. Thumbs up. I like that card. It's cool.
In classic return to form, whenever we come back and finally do a stupid card thing, he always gets the thumbs up.
Yeah.
Calvin, thumbs up or thumbs down?
Yeah, I have to give this one a thumbs up too. I mean, granted, it is something that I would probably consider like a niche corner of the case card to actually use. But if you're playing like a deck that does involve a lot of blinking and has the option to use like Soul Ring and, not Soul Ring, O-Ring and, Journey to Nowhere and stuff, I could see adding it in there.
Yeah, that makes it way more interesting than the way I was playing it, I think. So I definitely approve. Because I was just, you know, I would usually just cast it to be a jackass. And it was in Xur, which was already a deck of jackassery.
Well, Xur's kind of like that, where that deck can rebuild super fast off not that
much. Xur's like, yo, fuck y'all.
Yeah, so that's kind of like that idea I had, where you use it to fuck up the board and just rebuild much faster. I like that idea.
I actually took it out of Xur, because I'm like, man, this card's annoying. But I could definitely see myself putting it in something else now.
Yeah.
I could see myself picking it up. I mean, it's just one of those things where, like, even if I were to cast it and I didn't have anything, and everything, everybody got a chance to get their item back. The first item I got back was, like, a Ghostly Prison, and then, like, a Propaganda. Like, from this point.
What are you doing, man?
Yeah.
It's just more of a nice way of saying, once I hit 7 mana, unless you three can literally kill me now, you guys are going to take a while before you can come back this way.
Yeah, seriously. What was I going to say? And I think it'll be interesting the first time you cast it, because I'm going to bet most of the people you're playing with have not seen it.
Yeah, absolutely. Even people that played around that time probably don't remember what that card does.
Looking at the cards that people have been buying with Dimensional Breach, it's things like Global Ruin.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. I would put it in, like, a white-based Chaos deck. You know what I mean? Like, something like another copy of Warp World type deal, you know, where just everything's fucked up, and people are like, this game's still going, and you're like, yes, it is.
I would play this if I had, like, an Orrery out or something, or I had the Leyline of Sanctity.
Yeah.
Wait, not Sanctity. Anticipation. Yeah. If someone cast a Warp World, I would throw this right in front of it.
Yeah, you could also use the Hypersonic Dragon. I mean, we could come back to an America deck for this, and I think that's pretty funny, so.
Yeah.
There you go, it's good for an America deck. If you're building an America deck that wants to screw with people, Ruhan would be perfect.
Okay, so, kids, this is definitely an interesting build around me card. Maybe not so great in mono white, unless you're being really awesome. Just because it's gonna take so long, unless you, well, actually, I always play Oath of Lieges in my mono white decks, so you're gonna get to your mana faster, and hopefully you'll get people to bite and put out way too many lands with it too.
Sweet. It could be fun in like Isamaru, where you're just like playing a one to cast Gemmer.
Yeah.
And right now it's only like, what, 40 cent? I'm picking up 40s right now. I'm dead serious, I'm tossing it right into my cart first thing in the morning, I'm buying it.
Yeah, let's see. You can get it for like 15 cents near mint.
Probably pick up a foil for like 25 cents then.
All right.
And now it's time for Cassidy's Audacity. He doesn't follow the rules. Off color.
All right, so this week for the Audacity, we're going to talk about staples. Not the chain store and not the thing that comes out of staplers.
Oh.
But
apparently, I hope Commander Cast didn't make those jokes when they talked about this like last week.
Oh, yeah, I haven't. I tried. Oh, anyway, so staples. So we've talked about this a lot on the show. You know, Chris is pretty anti-staples. And basically the idea is that there's these cards that are just so good that they're like auto-includes. And this means that, like, a lot of people end up playing them, and you see them more often. You obviously get trounced by them more often because they're more powerful. So it becomes kind of this, like, positive-negative kind of, kind of positive-negative juxtaposition with this card. With staples. Sorry, I'm looking at my sandwich. I don't want to bite it.
Bite the sandwich, man. You won't
say it. I'm hungry.
What kind of sandwich is it?
Arby's.
Jesus Christ.
Wow. Is it the beef and cheddar?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. It's good. It's good out of the microwave too.
I actually like the turkey bacon ranch is pretty good at the Arby's.
Oh really? Cool.
Yeah. That's like a real sandwich though. Like it comes on bread.
Oh okay.
I used to work in an Arby's, so I've eaten a lot of Arby's food.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. That'd be a pretty sweet job, I guess.
Like the roast beef, like when it's in the freezer or when it's thawed, just looks like this mass of jello that you put in the oven and suddenly it becomes meat.
That's really gross, dude. But I'm going to finish my sandwich anyways. Okay.
Oh, yeah, so the sandwich is still good.
Sandwich.
And okay, the least amount of meat you're allowed to put on that is 2.7 ounces, since it's supposed to be 3 ounces.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that like the legal give or take, basically?
Yeah, the legal give or take is 0.3 ounces. So, of course, the store always says put 2.7 ounces on the sandwich.
Okay, so staples. So my question is does the staples exist? Like, I know we like agree that it's a phenomenon and things like that, but like really when it comes down to it, why wouldn't you want to play the cards that's best for your deck? And it just so happens that those cards are good in a lot of different decks. I wanted to kind of bring it to Christian first because, you know, you're
because I'm the one who hates them.
Yeah, you hate staples, so
well,
let's kind of open
the hate's discussion. A strong word, but I will say, like, I'm never going to fault anyone for playing anything they want to. But, like, every time I see, like, Solemn Simulacrum, it's like, oh, Solemn Simulacrum. Or, like, just any card. And, you know, I'll play cards that can be staples, too. Like, I've run Oracle Moldiah, which is a very good card.
Mm-hmm.
I've run, I don't know. Like, the card that I've actually been cutting lately is Beastmaster's Ascension. Which I think of as a staple, but I imagine aggro decks it is, right? I'm just checking.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay. As long as you're attacking with enough creatures. Yeah. I never play with enough green aggro, like, stompies like that to play.
But it's just like, I keep winning games with it, and it's like, well, this is getting pretty boring. I need to cut this thing, so I think of Beastmaster's Ascension as a staple. But it might just be that the deck's, like, I've been playing it online, and, you know, people don't do anything for, like, the first 6 turns online, I think. So if I have, like, 3 elves out and Beastmaster's Ascension, it's like, all right, I guess I'm winning this game.
I guess they don't play against Edric ever, because, like, they could have plenty of aggro out by turn 6, yeah. Jesus Christ.
Oracle of Moldiah does usually show up in elf decks, just because it's an elf, so it sort of helps that a little bit. I will say, like, I mean, there's a reason people play the best cards. It's because they're the best cards, and they're going to help you win better. For people that want to try and branch out a little bit, it's probably better to try and swap out the finisher staples as opposed to, like, the toolbox or utility staples that are getting you towards your perfect endgame.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, like a sort of Feast of Famine is more like kind of an endgame kind of thing, yeah. Right?
Or like, you know, there's always going to be enough beef to kill people with. It doesn't always need to be like, well, I was going to say like Prime Time and Avengers Endicar, but that combo isn't around for most of our kids out here anymore.
How about Kiki Jiki and anything?
Yeah, like Kiki Jiki and anything. Yeah, you can swap out whatever Kiki Jiki's copying because it's usually going to be pretty good no matter what.
Right.
So, you know, you can try out different combos with more niche finishers like that. But when it comes to like, you know, like your, you know, a lot of people like Soul Ring. I can't imagine people would want to cut Soul Ring from a lot of their decks unless it's very color dependent. Or, you know, a card like Solemn Sim, which is helping you gramp and get you, you know, drawing a card for you. It's harder to cut a card that's getting you somewhere as opposed to the one that's winning the game for you.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there. I really like what you said about the finisher part too, because for me, like, I tried doing the Kiki Jiki combo with like Village Bell Ringer in one of my decks, and like it was fun, and I got it off a few times, and then it was kind of like, well, I don't really like winning this way that much, and, you know, I just kind of wanted to do it a few times for shits and giggles, and now it's taken out. But then, like, there's cards like Sensei's Divining Top, where it's just like, man, I wish I had 8 copies of this fucking thing so I could go on every one of my decks, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's, like, the utility is definitely, like, definitely at least less nefarious, because it's kind of fun to be beat by something new, even if, like, even if everyone's using the same way to get to it. But at the same time, like, Solemn Simulacrum is just been getting really, really boring to me. Like, that card in particular, I don't know why. Maybe I just play it too often, or everyone plays it. Just kind of like, oh yeah, he's out there again.
Like,
I wish you had an art that didn't suck.
Like, I tell the story all the time, but the time I saw a guy play Kicked Right on Solemn Sim, I'm just like, is this guy fucking serious? This is what we're getting 5 more copies of.
Hey, that's a lot of cards.
It is a lot of cards, but seriously, like, whose idea of a good game is that?
Now that I mention it, I actually played Solemn the other day, and then copied him with Phantasmal Image, and then copied the image with Phyrexian Metamorph, or the other way around, the image came last. Yeah. But so I did have 3 Solemns on board for my clones, so I guess I can't really complain, dude. Although I did get board wiped, and I forgot to draw.
Yeah. But, like, I don't know, like, I hate Solemn, but I love a card like, what is it, Viridian Corruptor, the 2-1 elf that dies and gets you a land?
Oh, yeah, the Emissary. Yeah, that guy's
Yeah, the
cool.
Emissary. He's pretty sweet. I don't know why. Maybe because he's a 2-1, and I get him in for them beats.
Yeah, he's a pretty good, he's hard to block because people don't want to block him, so it's like, you're going to hit, like, for 2 every once in a while, and, you know, 2 damage can sometimes really deal, you know, be the last nail, especially if people are running, like, Mana Crypt and...
Yeah, but like if you're if you're green and you know you want you're probably going to run some sort of ramp, and almost every not awful ramp spell could almost be considered a staple at this point anyway. I mean, yeah, some people you say one is better than the other, but for the most part, except for a choice few like Savage Tilling, I would almost count almost every single one of them as almost a staple. I said almost like 5 times there.
Oh, Frenzied Tilling, the green-red one?
Yeah, Frenzied Tilling.
I actually like that card. Now that you mention it, I like how Cultivate and Kodama's Reach kind of make a comeback with Bobarigmos. Like, they're so mm-hmm. good in his deck. We should talk about Bobarigmos one of these days. He's so cool, man.
Yeah, I'm throwing him in my Blown Up Lands deck. But it's Naya, so he can't be the general.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, he's good in there. My brother actually, he picked up Seismic Assault and Bobarigmos in the same day because they both had a star. And he built the deck, and it's really fun to play. When he gets him out and then he has lands and I have, like, Vendilion Click and whatever, a bunch of little piddly dudes, I basically lose the game.
Yeah. Like, I feel like Naya is really important, though, because you want the second Sunrise and you want the...
Land tax and stuff,
You want the land tax, you want the new second Faith's Reward.
Is that deck?
I just have it as Rith right now.
Oh. My L sounds better with Bobarigmos.
Yeah. I don't, like, most of my creatures aren't gonna, my L won't grab.
Oh. Okay.
Because I'm running, like, Countryside Crusher and Goblin Raze Runners. And, Knight of the Reliquary.
You should use, damn it, what's his name? Azazan Tamar.
I'm tired of that guy.
Oh, okay.
I see him too much. Like, it's not like, I don't know, like, I don't see Rith a lot for some reason, but I have Rith. So I have 2 copies of Rith, so that's
Oh, there you go,
yeah. But, you know, and I'm sure your brother has Storm Cauldron in the deck because that's just so freaking awesome.
Yeah, I actually let him borrow my copy for it. I've been destroyed by that. Also, Creeping Renaissance
mm-hmm.
is amazing.
Yeah.
And, yeah, just so many cool cards with that deck. I love it.
Yeah, because you care about lands to an extent, but does he have Land's Edge? The Enchant World Seismic Assault?
No. Oh, I forgot about that card. I think he'll want that, though. I just built the deck, too, for my articles. I forgot all about that. Let me see.
Oh, boy, Land's Edge is like 20 cents.
Oh,
the Chronicles version is cheap. The Legends version is like $2.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. And you can discard any card.
Yeah.
If it's a land. That's awesome. Yeah, he actually might use that. You know what's funny though is I made that I made like a Magrim Liliana deck.
Mm-hmm.
So like Bulburig most is like he just gets so hosed when I play Liliana's Caress out.
Oh, is he running overlaid terrain? I assume.
Well,
I guess he doesn't have a way to bring the lands back as much.
He has. Which one's overlaid terrain?
Overlaid terrain's the one where you sack all lands and then each land produces two mana.
No, he doesn't have that. He has Scapeshift though.
Yeah, Scapeshift would be pretty good in there, too.
Yeah, with the Alka and some mountains. Yeah.
So you have Abundance?
Yeah, I mean, Abundance, the Green Curiosity, and Bubba Rigmos is basically like, yeah. I win.
Yeah, white is really good in the deck, though, I tell you what.
No, I agree. I'm actually probably going to build a Maya Al deck just so I can kind of like run all that stuff together. Plus, she gets Boros Angels. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Planar Birth, too. Can't forget that one.
Okay, so we were talking about something else and we got totally sidetracked.
Dude, this Bulburigmos is just so awesome.
Okay. He is so awesome. Do you have anything to say about Bulburigmos before we go back to the other discussion, Calvin?
Nah,
okay, so.
Oh, I have one more thing to say. I thought Lightning Storm copied every time you discarded a land to it. Or discarded a land. That is not how Lightning Storm works. What it deals X damage, target creature, player, where X is 3 plus number of charge counters on it. You discard a land to put 2 charge counters on it. And you may choose a new target for it, but it doesn't copy the spell. I read copy the spell in there.
Oh, you may choose a new target for it, so yeah. That's if, like, if it's gonna fizzle or something, I guess.
So, I thought it was this really awesome card, though. I'd just keep getting more copies as I pitch lands to it. Nope.
Huh.
More like Crap Storm.
Definitely Land's Edge, though. That card's cool as hell. I'm gonna tell my brother about that. He's gonna love that.
Yeah, I don't know, like, it just seems like, it's gonna feel really old in about a month, but it just seems like such a different way to go about things.
No, I don't think it'll get old because he's also got he's got the high power, so like, so like people are gonna like him not, cause, I mean, the land thing is cool, but for the most part, he just wrecks your face. Get a wolf run in play and you're dead in like 2 turns so fast, so. I like it a lot. And green red decks, I think, I'm tired of Rada. You know, I could go without seeing another Rada deck kick my ass. So, I mean, Bulburigmos is just, at least he's cool. He's huge. He's throwing fucking trees at you. You're like, ow, that's 3 damage. It's like getting hit by lightning bolt. That's awesome.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, even before, you know, I mean, we use the word staple a lot, but a card isn't a staple until it's seen a lot of play. So at some point, any card that is a quote-unquote staple was interesting and new at some point. Except for, Sol Ring.
I've always been interested in Sol Ring. I came into the game after they were, in 4th edition, so I didn't get a copy of it until Commander, actually. I don't have any old versions of it either, so I still think it's interesting. Fuck you guys. Just saying.
The only copy of Soul Ring I ever got a chance to pick up was the one from the, front. That was the, 41 from the vault.
Oh, cool. That's the same picture, right?
Yeah, it's the same picture as the, new ones from the commander boxes. And then I got, like,
I actually own a Soul Ring now. Because I have a commander one.
Yeah, boy.
I'll take it out. I still have that deck intact because it competes perfectly fine with my real decks.
I should put the Soul Ring in Karavek. He needs it.
He kind of does.
He really does.
That's actually something interesting, too. As much as we talk about staples, there's also staple ways that generals get played that you just see over and over and over.
Yeah, I mean, especially with guys like Karavek or, I play in my Gisela deck, I have a lot of colorless ramp. Because, like, you want to be able to play them fast enough, especially against, like, blue decks. If you play a lot against a lot of control, like, I mean, once your opponent has enough to, like, Cryptic Command and then Snapcaster Cryptic Command in the same turn, you're not going to play your general ever again. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you know, landing a Mana Vault on turn 3 and then casting Karavek on turn 4 actually makes it a real game instead of you being behind forever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but at the same time, like, in a deck that's, like, doesn't have a lot of height, like, in a white weenie deck, you know, or just mostly, like a Darien deck almost, you don't really need the ramp as much, because most of your creatures are not going to be using colorless mana, so a Soul Ring is going to be good to help get out Darien, but most of your creatures you need the planes, you know what I mean? So sometimes you won't even need a Sol Ring for a deck like that, or even a deck that, like my Caridor deck even, I would say I probably would never use a Sol Ring because almost all my creatures are one drops or two drops that have, or that are gold, you know what I mean? So like, so Sol Ring's not good in every single deck. Some decks it's not going to do what you need it to do. So it's like, there are some situations where staples are not good in every deck. But when we look at something like Sensei's Divining Top, like, I can't imagine too many decks that, like, maybe if your deck is so fast that you don't need to, or if you're playing blue and you're going to do it anyways, like, but besides that, like, every deck could use, like, the boost of looking at the top three cards and, like, making sure that you're going to have a good game. So, like, there are a few cards that are just, they're just good in every deck. But at the same time, it's like, I don't really see the problem with that, you know?
Well, the tryhards will tell you that top is shitty without any shuffle effects.
Well, they would be wrong, because looking at the top three cards and putting the one that you want to draw on top is invaluable. And so
and you also have the option to draw it now if you really chose to.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just very good for one mana. And, I mean, there's a lot of other side reasons it's good, too. But it's just, like, if you had it in every deck that you played, you'd play it, you'd get value out of it, and then you'd be like, ah, Sensei's Divining Top, this card's awesome. Probably the biggest problem I have with staples, though, is that everyone plays them, and that drives up the price. Like, that's that's my main issue, because we're talking about Sensei's Divining Top and Sol Ring here. Like, because Sol Ring was reprinted in the Commander set, it's a little bit cheaper, but it's still, the old ones are still like $10.
And doubling season.
Yeah.
That'll always be the classic one.
Yeah, I don't even consider that a staple. We've discussed it before. Yeah. I think that's a fluke. That's just like, that someone's really holding on to, or that everyone bought into, you know what I mean?
I still could see, like, Sensei's Divining Top being something they would reprint in, like, the next Commander-based product that they do.
Yeah, that'd be really nice.
Because, like, how, like, in the summer product they did when they had, like, what was it, like, the four Commander boxes, five boxes or something like that? It was five, right?
Yeah, five boxes, and they're doing that again this year.
And if they're doing that same thing again this year with the five boxes, instead of putting Sol Ring in all five boxes, I could see them slapping a top in all five boxes.
That would be really
cool. Just to kind of like, you know, help fluster the market on that particular item. Because it is also, yeah, it is like another card that technically everyone in this format kind of uses.
And it's banned in Modern, so it won't get reprinted in Modern Masters. Yeah. And
the only other format they would probably want it would be like, what, Legacy?
Yeah, Legacy, but they like to drive up everything. So. They'll drive up the sale of the Commander boxes, if nothing else, you know what I mean?
Right.
Also, it's an uncommon card, so paying $20 for an uncommon card that wasn't printed that long ago, it's probably not $20, but $15. Either way, it's like,
yeah, whatever. But still, like, if they put it in the summer thing for the Commander, well, not summer, the November, for this year's Commander thing, they could easily, like, you know, bring that price down in a nice amount.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I could easily see, like, you know, like, if Commander had, like, more, like, artifact-based staples, like, Top and Sol Ring and stuff like that, like, something that you can actually slap into all the boxes, like a Reliquary Tower or something. I could see them having some card like that they just slap into each one every year.
That would be kind of off-topic, but it would be pretty interesting if they printed, like, two new colorless Commanders and then just put out a Karn deck.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. I wonder what they're gonna do with it. They haven't really spoiled anything. They have so much on their plate right now to spoil that, like, they haven't gotten to it at all, so.
I'm fine not waiting, cause they'll get to it.
Yeah, they'll get to it eventually.
My thing is, like, I personally have a theory that this year we're probably gonna be going to Dominaria for, the next set. So I'm kind of thinking that if we get anything,
I would jizz so hard.
Hmm?
I would jizz so hard.
Yeah, because, you know, this is the 20-year anniversary, and from the vaults getting 20 cards in it, it seems like Dominaria would be, like, the key idea or place to kind of go back to after all this time. Because, like, what was the last time we went to? Was Time Spiral? How long ago was that?
Oh, a long time ago. And Time Spiral did not sell very well.
Right, but
if they had put out like a Time Spiral-ish set nowadays, though, I think it would sell really well.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's so many more like nostalgia players and stuff like that. And, I mean, I think they're more equipped to know what the market wants out of something like that. So Because I think M13 was a really great set for, like, old reprint cards that you don't see that people actually want, you know what I mean? So I think they're kind of figuring out that, like casual players especially, like, yeah, we like old cards with new art. That'll make us buy the set, basically.
All right, but Calvin, you haven't really weighed in on staples. What do you think of them here?
Well, my view on staples is that, yes, like, as everybody, like, can tell, like, a staple card is something that pretty much goes in any deck, or you play a particular general and this card has to go in there because it works so well with it. You can't even think about trying to do a Reach to Redeem deck without thinking about slapping a doubling season in it to get extra tokens, or you can't think about doing, like, say, a deck that revolves around Omnath without having some type of explorer effect that automatically gives you extra lands and stuff, you know? And I fully understand where people come from, where they don't like the ideas of stapler. Oh, I keep saying staples messing up the
Luis
format.
Is going to have a lot to draw.
Yeah. Like staplers. But I can see, like, people, like, getting upset because of the fact that staples are so, like, consistent. But my view on staples is, like, with the way Wizards is printing cards recently, there's so many new, innovative, interesting, and just all around good cards that are being printed that you can't really complain, because if you think about what they could be printing, you just think of, like, actually just go back to before we had, like, the brand new borders and look at something from like, what is it, Chronicles, or look at, like, the cards that are from, what was that one where they, did the first, hold on. Damn it, not Portal. The one that came out after Portal.
Portal Second Age?
No.
Starter?
What the hell was that?
Beatdown Box?
Shut up, Chris. It was on Dominaria.
Oh.
And it was when they had the five color spell that got banned with
Invasion? What
was his name? I think that was, yeah, Invasion, there we go. I mean, you could look at cards from, like, Invasion and pretty much any of those other sets that we kind of named. You can really see that at that time, like, creatures were all kind of weak and sucked, and abilities weren't really all that interesting, and the whole game was ran by spells. And, you know, like, if you tried to build a commander deck just out of those things, granted, yeah, you would probably have a fairly decent deck, and it probably wouldn't really have any, like, of the current modern day staples in it, but still, it wouldn't be as good as it could be, and it might not be nearly as fun to play. But then, like, you start thinking about, like, all the various things that they have nowadays that are actually, like, kind of interesting to play around with. Like, you know, you might want to try building a deck based around Battalion. You might want to try a deck based around Dredge or some type of Blink effect. I mean, like, almost every year when they make a set, we end up having a set that really could support its own EDH deck if you build it correctly. Like, just from the cards within that set. And it would still be just as good or as competitive, even without staples.
You guys want to make block EDH decks sometime?
Yeah, I've been doing the standard EDH decks for a while.
I have no problem building a block EDH deck.
I'll pick the block. Invasion. Invasion's like, we like multicolor, but we have no idea what the fuck we're doing with it.
No, it's Zendikar block, and we have a deal, because I could just make an Omnath deck.
Omnath and...
Yeah, and freaking Calvin would make Tuck the Explorer.
Hell yeah, I would.
Hey, there's actually a lot of really good red cards in Zendikar. Yeah.
I can't really see. And the thing is, like, and people complained about staples being used, and this card is a staple. This card is a staple.
I mean, I think we're putting up a bit of a straw man, though, because the people who are complaining about staples are way outweighed by the people who are just like, I'm going to play the cards that help me win.
Well, and right. These are also the same people that are complaining every time a new good card comes out that might replace an old staple. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, we're basically arguing with fanatics, and I had to do that plenty of times in college, and I hated it, so.
One of the things I actually really do really like about our particular format, though, is that it has, like, the 99-card limit, you know, outside of the general. So, like, if your color combination at this rate ends up getting enough staples, you're not going to be able to build a deck with them all. Because eventually you will run out of room between like your commander and your mana. There's only going to be so many cards you can put into a commander deck. So eventually, like no matter how many staples there are, there's going to be a quote unquote staple that you can't include because you don't have the space for it.
Yeah, as many good utility staples and whatnot as there are, you still need a way to actually win the game.
Yeah. I think the worst thing about staples, though, you know, to kind of play the other side and get back to it a little, is how it makes it so, like, it's harder to play cards that aren't good. And
maybe
I think
for
that's
you guys.
I do like to play cards that aren't good, but the problem is, like, you'll get a new card that you want to put in, and, like, when you look at everything and you, like, objectively look at the cards, a lot of time you'll cut the card that is not good just because you want to try the new card, you know? And you kind of have to, like, make a conscious choice to play older, crappier cards sometimes, which, I mean, is a big part of our show. I mean, the stupid card thing is totally like that in a nutshell, but at the same time, how many times do any of the stupid card things that we give a thumbs up and end up into any of our decks, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot. Out of all the stupid cards, only like two of them have ever actually ended up in one of my decks.
Yeah.
And one of them's in there, and I still have yet to cast it.
Dual Nature?
Yep.
I'm gonna throw a sort of Street Fighter analogy in here, where like, you know, you've been working with a dude that you're not used to playing with, and you know, you've been working on some stuff, and you just want to try the shit out, but the guy you're playing against will only use like Dhalsim.
Yeah, just beat the shit out of you.
Yeah, it'll just beat the shit out of you with long-range stuff that you're not equipped to know how to defeat yet with whoever the dude is you're using. So you don't get to actually mess with anything, and you just get pissed off.
Yeah, and then you just switch back to your good character so you can just play the actual game. Yeah, that's actually a really great analogy. And that's kind of actually the other point we haven't gotten to, whereas the staples are only... You only need the staples if you're playing against other staples. Like, you know, if you're part of a group that doesn't play with a lot of the cards that, like, get everything going, like, no one has a Sensei's Divining Top, no one's playing Trinket Mage, you know, no one has Green Sun Zenith in their deck to get Dryad Arbor or any of those shenanigans, like, then that's not really a staple anymore because you don't need it to compete. Like, to me, the staples are there to help to bridge the gap so you can compete against other decks and play real games. But if that isn't an issue, then you can play any terrible card that you want, and that's pretty cool too. And then there's whole new staples, and it really, you know, it kind of comes down to depending on what is your meta game and what your, you know, we don't talk about the meta very often on the show, mostly because, you know, we don't want to pretend that we know. Yeah, and we don't want to pretend that we know what we're talking about by real words. But I will say that
staples are nice because they give you a nice card to target. Like, I will throw in cards just to fuck with Top. Or, you know, Stranglehold is a staple of mine because it ruins so many other cards.
Yeah, Stranglehold's so cool.
Or even, like, even Mind Sensor is basically a staple because it ruins many other staples.
Yeah, and it's fast. I like the Mind Sensor a lot, too. I mean, he kind of doesn't stay on the board, so, like, don't think he's, like, a permanent answer or anything, but nothing's funnier than responding to, like a crack, a fetch land or something with Mind Sensor, and it's like, oh, you whiff, so sorry.
I just wish that dumbass wasn't, like, a goofy-looking owl. That might be, like, Rebecca Guay's worst art.
Yeah, well, I think that's a card that could get reprinted with, like, a normal-looking order and stuff, so, you know.
We might see the Modern Masters reprint. It's a good card in Modern, too.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so I think we'll wind this up here. If you kids got anything to say about staples, why don't you email the show at offcolorcast@gmail.com. Okay, beautiful people, you survived episode 42 of Off Colorcast. Good job to you guys. Good job to us, too. This is a good old show.
Pat on the back.
If you want to contact me, best way to do it is on Twitter, @ChristianReneau. Hit me up if you have any hookups for Brocaine, that is ground up semen that I can snort.
Oh my god. What the hell is that?
What? You've never done a hit of the Brocaine?
Absolutely not. But But we'll talk.
I'm fainting. He's fainting bad, kids. Daddy needs his medicine.
Like, can't you just use your own?
About the same.
The day when it'd be brocane.
Yeah.
It'd be yokane.
Jesus Christ. All right. Fuck. I think I've said everything I need to, Cassidy. Say goodbye.
Yeah. I mean, you guys have heard the show before, so yeah. Just no. I'm done.
Read a damn article on TCG Player. Yeah. Pretend that you're going to buy cards. And if you buy cards on TCG Player, email whoever the dude is and be like, "I bought these because Cassidy wrote about it."
Yeah, it won't make a difference. Yeah. They won't pick
bitch about him on bitch about his articles on Facebook. Like everybody else does.
Yeah, that's great.
Sounds all right, Calvin, take us on home.
Okay, everybody, this is Calvin. I'm also known as Captain Resin right here. If you're looking for me, you can always find me on Twitter at Captain Resin, or you can go to Gmail, hit me up there at CaptainResin@gmail.com. All Fella has a Facebook group and a Facebook page where we update and we put down where the new show's links up to stuff like that. Let's see. You can also come over and catch us on offcolorcast.com. You can comment on the show there. You can download us and listen to us from there, or you can go and listen to us from mtgcast.com.
If we had ever given the episodes.
Yeah. Like, you know, like, I actually kind of find it interesting because, like, since I kind of messed up on the order of which I sent them, like, mtgcast has our shows up. They have all of them so far. But the thing is, they're, like, in the wrong order. So it's like, you know, you see, like, episode 30, episode 28, episode 17, episode 42.
Oh, man, that's just so our show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, before we had the wrong show notes. And
yeah, we didn't even have the right names and the people. What was it? Something like...
Sean Seabury. I remember that.
Yeah.
Well, we actually got a comment on the site. Calvin, get on that shit.
Alright. And what else? Oh, yeah. I've also got just started trying to figure out how to do MTGO. So I'm Captain Redzone over here too.
Okay. Well, I like it.
I'm trying to figure out exactly how to play a few of these games on this thing. Because it's like one of the... Okay, I'm here. I haven't bought anything yet. I haven't downloaded anything yet. I'm just kind of like looking around trying to see if I can see how things are set up for it.
Very shittily.
Yeah, I'm expecting so.
You need to join the Beards and Bros clan.
But I'm thinking about just buying one of the Commander boxes that's on there just so I can have a Commander deck to play around with.
Oh, cool. It has like a Commander product for it.
Yeah. Actually, what you should do is buy, what is it, buy Counterpunch on there and then just immediately trade the Scavenging Ooze for like 25 tickets.
Oh,
and then.
Cool.
And then buy more shit.
And then buy more shit.
Yeah, I don't know what Scavenging Ooze is actually going for right now, but I've actually thought about just buying the one deck and then just selling the Scavenging Ooze out of it to buy more stuff.
How much does the deck go for, like, MSRP?
Yeah, it's MSRP on there.
So MSRP is like $29.99. But, you know, I think about picking that up. The main reason I decided to go to MTGO is because I really want to play draft, like, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But my schedule kind of keeps me at work on late on Friday nights. So, and the only places around here that actually have like events on Saturdays are either the pre-release, the release, or like standard or modern.
Where you can actually probably get the most bang for your buck in limited, and it won't be drafting, but they do a Phantom Sealed, where you can pay $4 and you can do a sealed event, and then if you win enough, you'll win packs, but you don't get to keep the cards.
I might actually give it a try.
Yeah, but that's only $4 as opposed to like the 14 for a draft. And if you keep winning, you can keep going.
I've never found with sealed. Sealed is actually one of my favorite formats out of the whole like limited thing. Because I like drafting, I like sealed. And the thing is that I can't do it now because of the way my schedule is. Yeah. And I have like no idea when I'm going to get a chance to ever do it again.
Well, if Calvin starts doing it, then I'm going to have to start doing it because I wanted to. And no one ever wants to play Cockatrice, so maybe I'll just get into it too. See how it goes.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I'm thinking about buying, like, one of the decks tomorrow just so I can have something there. And, you know, figure out how the deck construction on there works and the interface and things like that. And then once I get, like, used to playing with it,
it'll make
then,
you
like,
punch
you know,
a baby.
Well, you know, I understand I might want to punch a child, but in the same token, it's one of the things where I just want to learn enough of it so I can know how to play on it. And then you're like, I'll deal with the glitches as they come. Mm-hmm. But I really don't want to start playing draft and just to find out that I clicked the wrong button and conceded.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if we had problems recording us playing Cockatrice, we could definitely probably get a lot of really funny stuff out of all of us having, like, no good cards on MTGO.
I have, like... Oh, I don't have anything good on MTGO. I have, like, 8,000 cards or something, though, and they're just all crap.
Well, that's cool.
I mean, like, I'll open anything good, and I'll trade it down to, like, 100 awful cards.
Yeah, I was thinking about just, like, taking some money and going to, like, one of those dollar bots, and then just, like, seeing what I can just pick up from there.
Yeah.
And just, like, slap some things in there.
I'm going to shut the show down. Guys, all right. Kids all have a good night.
Yep, see you guys later.
Later.
See y'all.